Welcome to Master the Start, a podcast for young professionals where we interview business experts on how you can master the start of your life in business.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Master the Start podcast presented by GoMahi.com. This is episode number 32, and I have a public announcement before we jump in. Up to this point, I want to publicly make it known that I have made a massive mistake. All of our episodes that we have done in person, I have been messing up the audio by not connecting the mic properly. That is foolish and quite embarrassing. But I would like everyone to know that moving forward, even though we're already 32 episodes in, it is going to be significantly clearer. Bear with us in this episode. I think the audio is still pretty good, but it's not perfect. So from here on out, you're going to hear clear, beautiful audio if we're doing in-person interviews, and you'll hear the same type of audio experience when we do our Skype calls. So let's jump into this week's episode. I am pumped because we have Peggy Steffen on the show today, and she is actually one of my partners in crime. She created The Commons, a co-working space with her sister Tammy. I was kind of looking around at creating a little excerpt for her, and I figured, you know what? It might be better for her and Tammy to do the explanation. So I actually stole something from their site, and I'll read it to you now. The Commons is both a place and a concept. The concept came first, born from a global movement called co-working. We were looking for a place to work, knowing that merely finding office space was not our goal. We were collaborators, connectors of people who have a healthy curiosity for a myriad of subjects, but mostly for the synergy that can only be found in the interaction with other people. We looked at some great co-working spaces. What was missing for us was our community, not so much figuratively, but literally. That's when we found our uncommon workplace, smack dab in the middle of the Lake Minnetonka area where we have lived and served for nearly 3 decades. A space in the unique town of Excelsior, energized by Lake Minnetonka, across the street in an environment that embraces the needs of a thriving community. 6 years later, we have expanded our footprint and are focusing on another of the West Metro's gems, Hopkins. This charming community is a small town with all the conveniences of the city. Located in the heart of Hopkins on Main Street, we are central to many restaurants and local shopping spots and are part of the dynamic resurgence of this 125-year-old town. So, they invite all of us to join them. And for all of you that aren't here in the Twin Cities, I don't think that will be possible. But whether you're looking for a place to hang out, put on your work hat, conduct a meeting, or throw a party, The Commons has been created for all of that. The Commons is a place for community, to drop in for a lecture, speaker, or a meeting of minds. At the end of the day, Tammy and Peggy, all they want to do is create a space for you. So settle in, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, iHeart, or Google Play. I'm really excited, especially at this exact moment, because now we'll have better audio for all of you. So make sure you comment on your thoughts about how dumb I am for not doing it properly up to this point. And most importantly, enjoy this week's episode of Master the Start. Well, Pegster, also known as the one and only Peggy Steffen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Bobby.
You're so welcome. So this is going to be a little more casual than normal, because Peggy and I guess we can call each other partners
in crime. Absolutely.
Kind of. Yeah, so Peggy's also very busy for all of you out there, so we're actually at one of her locations, so she has to get up, go help someone. We'll edit it the best we can, but we got to do what we got to do.
Oh, there's no one more important to me than you right now, so it better be a really important person that walks in the door.
Honestly, any client is more important than me. So, I say we just hop right in, huh?
Let's do it.
So, who's Peggy Steffen? Like, what's your story?
How long do you want me to take?
Let's go with 5 minutes.
All right.
What's The Commons?
The Commons. So The Commons is an uncommon workplace. That's actually our full name. And we really are a place that brings together people in an environment that's different for work than their home, than their office, than a coffee shop, than any other place that they might go and do work. We have shared workspace for coworkers, and people can come in by the hour, by the day, or most people have a membership and they come in on a regular basis. We have what we call dedicated desks. We have private offices. We have meeting rooms. We have mail services. We're just a place for entrepreneurs, remote workers, startups, anybody to, we're there to help people be more successful. That's what the Commons is about. Connecting people and collaborating and just finding a great place to work.
Beautiful. No, I'm actually kind of excited for this because it gives me an excuse to ask you a bunch of questions that I don't know the answers to. because I actually have an idea of what the Commons is.
Yes.
But to get more into that, how did you and Tammy become a team? And Tammy is your sister.
Tammy's my sister. So we've been a team for, you know, 6 decades.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, pretty much. So Tammy was a senior partner in an architecture firm for 33 years. And at that time, when she made a decision to leave this huge firm and go out on her own, I was doing coaching, business coaching, life coaching, that kind of thing. And I was actually renting a space at her firm. And so she was leaving. She had decided that if she was ever going to go out on her own, she had to do it then. And I didn't really want to be at her office without her there. So we both went out looking for space that we could share together. Neither of us wanted to work at home for a whole host of reasons, but mostly because we're really social animals and didn't want to be alone. And secondly, because we do and want to present ourselves in a professional environment, not just, you know, come sit at my dining room table with me while I show you plans or while I do some coaching with you. Mm-hmm. So we went looking, and I had heard about co-working, and Minneapolis is home to some of the greatest, you know, grassroots co-working spaces. And at that time, COCO, which is now called Field Collective, was kind of the gold standard around here. And so we went and visited, and we loved the idea. We loved everything about it. It was downtown Minneapolis. We lived in Excelsior. We didn't want to go downtown. We didn't want to do the commuting. We didn't want to pay for parking, a whole bunch of things. But we loved, loved, loved the idea. So we were trying to figure out something else to do. And anyway, I drove by space in downtown Excelsior. I was driving by, running errands, whatever. I saw a big sign that said for lease, backed up, pulled in, peeked in the windows, and was like, oh my gosh, you know what? This would be the best co-working space. So for anybody that's listening, that's thinking about starting a business, this is how you don't do it. It was all emotional. There was no big plan. I just called Tammy and said, hey, Tammy, found a great place for a co-working space. Come and look at it. Okay, that's what we'll do. I mean, literally, that's how it started. And so we, you know, talked to the building owner and brought in a friend who was in commercial real estate and just started talking about the whole thing. And I mean, I could go on for hours about it, but we decided to jump off and open the Commons in downtown Excelsior. It's 5,000 square feet. Neither of us had ever owned our own business, but we had, in our family, there had been business owners and our husbands were both entrepreneurs, and we just sort of jumped in.
Do you remember what kind of overhead there was out of the gate? Like, what were your costs to get started?
Well, yeah, I remember very well.
Like, and how did you, do you guys just have money saved up for that? Did you guys?
Well, I've often joked that we should have, instead of naming it the Commons, we should have named it 401k, because that is my 401k over there. And Tammy's, and a loan, and a couple of loans. So it took us over $250,000 to get started. Over $250,000 to get started.
Jeez.
Yeah, so we had to build out the space. The building owner would not do any tenant improvements, which, you know, that's okay because our rent was a little lower because of that. And we have, Tammy's an architect. Her husband has a construction company, though he does huge kinds of, he doesn't do small commercial, but he helped us out. Tammy had people that she works with. So we did do pretty good on the build out, but buying the furniture, all the technology, you know, building a kitchen. I mean, it was very expensive. And then that runway for the several months before anybody even walked in the door. And then the couple of years before we started to break even.
So how did you and Tammy actually divide your skills to optimize, essentially? Yeah. You guys are completely different people.
Although when people see us, they think, are we twins when they see us apart from each other? Though no, you never quite got that.
Nobody thinks that.
And we're not twins.
Yeah, you know, so backstory to everyone out there. We are partners in location in Hopkins, mm-hmm. and we had plenty of meetings together. And I had no clue they were sisters. None of us in the ownership group did, except for my father. And one day I was like, did you guys know they're sisters? And everyone's like, no.
Which I just think is hilarious because everybody thinks we look so much alike.
Very confusing.
But yes, you're right. We're very different people. And that's why our partnership works. Tammy handles anything that has to do with the physical facility. So, you know, it's her plan for the whole build out and then what the place would look like and just basically what the vibe would be. Everything about the place itself is Tammy. And anything about running the business and doing marketing and, you know, day to day is me. Doesn't mean that there's not some blending somewhere in the middle there, but it's a really clean division of labor. It really is.
Maybe this is too personal, but no, we can cut it if it is, but I'm just kind of curious. It kind of feels like you're stuck with more work in the sense that, like, you're running it all day, every day, and Tammy can still work on her architecture. So how does that work? And are you guys 50-50 partners? Is there a financial difference?
No, we're 50-50 partners, and Tammy does her architecture full-time. She offices at the Commons in Excelsior, and she'll go take over the front desk if need be. If somebody's, you know, sick or on vacation or whatever, she does. And she does a lot more than probably looks like to the, you know, just casual observer. She's still doing a lot of work with graphics and stuff we need for marketing. And, you know, I run all of the big decisions by her. We decide those together. So, for instance, and I think we'll talk about this later, but we have kind of a different business line that we're adding on, and I would not do that without full cooperation with her and, you know, strategizing and that. But yeah, I am the day-to-day, and I'm, as you know, I'm here at Hopkins every day, and we have the wonderful and fabulous Tricia Mills that runs the show over at Excelsior. But Tammy had, while we have 50-50 ownership, Tammy has more of her money into the business. And so we actually, the business itself is paying back Tammy on the part that's the unequal part.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So I get that. I get that for sure. Have you guys always done business well together since you started?
Yeah. You know, we never did a business together before 2012 when we started all of this, but you know, it's gone remarkably well. I certainly can't think of a fight. I don't even think I would call anything a disagreement. I think that there have been differences of opinion, but we've worked through it remarkably well.
I mean, this is just a selfish question now, but you've done consulting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What do you think has allowed you and Tammy to work together so well as family? Because you see companies just fall apart with family. And my brother and I, we work together. Mm-hmm. And we're family and we don't fight. We get along. But I was
People
curious.
Find it amazing that happens. But I also think, first of all, there's an incredible friendship that's there. That's the basis of all of it. And there's nobody that I trust more than Tammy. You know, so you start at this incredibly high level of trust and respect for each other. I respect Tammy. She's like one of the smartest people that I know. And then from a business perspective, she has always been in a consultative role as an architect. I mean, the reason why she's successful is because she elicits from people what they need, what they want, what their problems, what their challenges are, and then she collaborates with them to come up with solutions for them. And that's how we approach our business. All the work that I've done up to that time is bringing people together, collaborating, how are we going to do this, Let's look at the greater good. Let's look at what the entity itself, whatever that entity is, let's look at what the entity needs to be successful, to grow, to thrive, and to serve others. And that's also the huge bottom line basis of all of this is the commons, aptly named, is about we want to be a common place for people to thrive in their life.
Yeah.
Their personal life and their business life.
Yeah. And I think that's really important what you just touched on, the whole friendship thing. Mm-hmm. Because I think if you go into business with your family, you need to ultimately love that person more than the business at all costs, or else it will break you.
It will.
Yeah.
And again, because we have this clear division of where our skill sets are, because they're, I mean, you know, if you took a Venn diagram, there's some stuff in the middle about collaborating and, just working in collaboration with others. Not just collaborating on what outcome is, but just even being the place for the metamorphosis of thought to be. But we're physically at two different places. That helps. Mm-hmm. I actually left the commons for a couple years and worked with a consulting firm. And during that time, Tammy did run the day-to-day. And I think she was probably glad that I came back. It was a lot for her while I was gone.
Hmm. That's... I didn't know that.
Didn't you know that?
No.
Yeah.
No clue. So when you opened the Commons in 2012, mm-hmm. you said that's when it was, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people knew what co-working was.
No.
So what was the biggest problem when you opened? What was the biggest struggle? And can you remember your first sale?
I remember my first sale. Yes. Let me tell you about my first sale. So when we were building out the space in Excelsior, I mean, literally, our entire family was there doing work, along with the contractor. But on the weekends, we were there. I mean, my husband, Tammy's husband, our mom and dad, my son, one of my sons was in town then, friends. We were putting together chairs and tables. And, you know, and our other, Lindy helped start the business with us, too. She wasn't a financial partner, but she's definitely a partner in the business. And if it weren't for Lindy, we would have never gotten off the ground either. Her husband was there, and we were all there. And one day, when we were in the midst of all this, and, you know, the doors open and cardboard boxes out in the parking lot all over the place, a woman walked in who we knew, and she'd been a realtor in, you know, the Deep Haven Excelsior area for a long time. And she lived in one of the condo buildings that's kind of right across the street. And she came in, wanted to know what we were doing. And she was our first member, and she was 79 years old. So you think co-working is all about millennials and youngsters and that. Here's this person who's like been an early adopter all of her life. And she came in, she just said, I just want to be a part of this. And she was the first member. Before we ever opened, she joined.
79?
Yeah. She's still with us, although she leaves us in the wintertime because she goes to Steamboat in Colorado and teaches skiing. She still teaches skiing. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So the hardest thing, though, for us at the beginning, I think, was to describe what co-working was. People did not understand it, even if we told them. There was just this little blank stare all the time. So we were always having to tweak our, you know, what you call your elevator speech. How are we going to explain to people what we were doing? You know, sometimes we weren't so good at it. But we eventually got it down, and people started to understand that this is a place where people can come and have professional amenities, can have a professional place to work, and it's affordable, and it's a place to find your tribe.
Yeah.
You kind of have to be there and be in it to feel it.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah.
I didn't quite get it until I started coming here quite a bit.
Yeah.
When you guys actually started having success, mm-hmm. and I know you started kind of expanding, what were the good decisions you made during that growth phase, and what were the bad decisions that kind of popped up?
Well, I think that the bad decisions are also the good decisions. And what I mean by that is we jump into things pretty quick. We're very fast decision makers, and we jump right in. Because we go with our gut and what feels right, and when we trust people and when we feel good about what that relationship will be like. So we expanded 1 year after we opened. We opened up a second location in Minnetonka, and that was probably a little too fast. However, it ended up to be a perfect thing for us because we had private offices at that location, which we didn't have in Excelsior. And we also, our first tenant, I'm making air quotes here, was actually the Minnetonka School District. They brought in a new program that they were starting that's called the Vantage Professional Studies Program, which is now in its own space off campus and has, you know, 250, 300 kids in it. But that first year was 45 students, and they started at Excelsior, and they came there every day for half a, or excuse me, at Minnetonka, and they came there every day for half a day. We switched them over to Excelsior after a certain point, and I won't go into all the details on that, but it was great to have them there. I mean, the energy and the being part of the community and community service, again, we were giving back to the community, and the kids really got to see what it was like to be in a space. They were going to school in a space where there were startups and entrepreneurs, and then those people also got to see, because they were all members of our community, how impressive high school kids are and how amazing it was that this program was going on, and they mentored kids and did all kinds of stuff. But they got to see where their tax dollars were going too, and I think that that's an important service that we've been able to provide.
Yeah, for sure. So you think that's what worked well?
Well, I think it was bad and good. I mean, it was great in terms of how it ended up, but I think the decision made it difficult. One of the reasons we moved them from Minnetonka to Excelsior was because of just sort of the dynamics of and the amenities that the kids could have and that the teachers could use. So we sort of jumped into that Minnetonka space knowing we had a first tenant, and then we moved them over to Excelsior. So then there we were with this, you know, that space at that time was probably about 3,000 square feet, and we really, I mean, you could have rolled a bowling ball through then. All of a sudden, we had to build that space back up.
Gotcha.
So then I went over there and did all the business development at that space.
Gotcha. I didn't know you added an office 1 year after you opened Excelsior.
We did. 1 year. Actually, a little less than 1 year.
Did you even, how many people did you have at Excelsior at that point?
Oh, not very many. 10? I mean, regulars, like people, yeah. I mean, we had people that were doing drop-in and that kind of thing, but regular, we didn't have any offices at Excelsior yet, which is also another interesting thing. Can I jump to that for a second?
Sure.
So this was one of those also like bad decisions that we were able to rectify pretty quickly. We really were committed to the idea of co-working, which was all about people being in this shared space. And we continually had people coming in looking for offices. They liked the whole idea. They wanted to be part of that space, but they also wanted a private office. So we really quickly had to build some private offices if we wanted to capture those members. And we didn't have any money to do it. So very long story short, one of our members has a construction company, residential remodeling and building company. And he did the build out for us, and he paid for it, and we bartered with him for his office space still. I mean, he and employees come in to the commons, and he's still working off of the credit that we gave him for building out the space.
Hmm.
So it was a really wonderful partnership there too, that Nate was willing to do it. He wanted to be there. He wanted the office. He was growing. He needed something more. We needed it. And again, another great partnership that we have.
So where's the commons now? And where I want to go with that is you're kind of brick and mortar at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about exploring WAS.
Mm-hmm.
WAS, everybody. Let's make it very clear. That's what you call it. And I just, I'm curious where you see the commons now, where you kind of want to see it go, what you want to explore, and that could
So no matter what we do, so we don't have the Minnetonka location anymore. We opened up Hopkins a year ago. We had all three spaces for, what was that, about 5 months? And then Minnetonka closed, and so we're back to two spaces, Excelsior and Hopkins. Excelsior, we have about 5,000 square feet. Here in Hopkins, we have about just under 3,000 square feet. And so it's a little bit of a zero-sum game. You know, there's only so much money you can make if every single seat is filled and every single spot is filled. even if you add it up, that's, you know, finite to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. I mean, the variable is our meeting room rentals. The variable is something with the drop-in workers that I way overestimated how we could do that. That was a mistake. I really thought this was going to be a little bit more like, you know, like a health club membership, that there'd be people who are members never showed up. Mm-hmm. Like I do with my health club memberships.
Yeah.
I don't go. And so I thought that we'd have, you know, some percentage that was, you know, over 50%, but we'd have a bunch of people that only came in occasionally. Turns out people love to be here and they come in almost every day. Love it. That's wonderful. I wouldn't change a thing at the point that we're at right now, nearly 7 years out. But I want to increase my revenue without increasing my square footage, because at Excelsior, for certain, we're landlocked. You know, we have all the space that's available there. And frankly, we don't have any more parking, and we need more parking over there. One of the reasons that we love Hopkins is all the abundant free parking. But, you know, and you and I have talked about this at length. We would love to expand in Hopkins. Even though we're not full here, there's some opportunities that we'd both like to take advantage of. But until that, we can avail ourselves of maybe some more space. I really want more revenue to come in that isn't increasing space. So that's why I've been looking at what's now being called WASP, at least by you and I, which is workspace as a service, like software as a service. So in the industry, there's several different omni-channel partners that have all kinds of things that I can market out there to the world. And I'm trying to determine right now what we want to. So what I figured out thus far, and we're going to launch soon, within 60 days, I certainly hope, is a much more robust virtual membership. Right now, all of our virtual memberships really are, we will accept your mail. You can use us as a mailing address. We'll let you know if anything comes in. People have a little mailbox or not, because we ran out of mailbox space. But like when I say that it's more robust with these mailing services, there's apps where we can scan stuff in. Like I'd say, Bobby, you got mail, and we show you a picture of it, and then you indicate back to us via this app what you want us to do with that mail. You're going to come pick it in, pick it up. You want us to open it up and scan it to you. We can even open it up and there's a check in there. We can deposit the check for you with these services. So I'm determining which ones we should be using. Also looking at some different phone answering services, which kind of surprises me, because people have asked us over the years if we have phone answering, and we go, no, people use their cell phones, and you know, that's going with the way of the horse and buggy. But people still want phone answering services. And so I'm trying to find one that also meets with what our customer service standards are. In other words, it's not just another number. You can get that for free with Google Voice. Mm-hmm. It's you could choose to do a live answering, or it just really would be a separate number. And it's more options within what you do with messages when they come in and how you route people that would be worth people spending instead of trying to do it with their cell phone or with something like Google Voice.
Gotcha. So pretty much that's just for the remote workers that don't want to go into a shared office.
I think both. I mean, I think that our people who are here with shared office might also want some of those other services. But I see us having members not only all over the state, but they could be all over the country. I mean, I also really look at people who travel a lot that might pop in here. But when they're traveling, they want to have that same set of people helping to service them, because they understand their business and they understand what's going on and they know the quality of the product that we provide. In a high-tech world, we're a really high-touch business. We don't let the phone go to voicemail here. We don't have, you know, answering and then, you know, press one, whatever. We answer the phone between the second and third ring every time. And if we don't, we let each other know that somebody blew it if you don't do it. If a message or if a caller goes to a voice message, it might happen once or twice a week, and that is it. We don't have people book their meeting rooms online. We have them call us, walk up to the desk, email us, because what happens is sometimes we can move people around. If you're just looking at a calendar, it might be that something's not available, but we know that Bobby's in there and maybe I can move him over here. If you really are bringing eight people into a meeting room, I could put him in the phone room. Or somebody might also book a room that's a $65 an hour room, and I talk to them about what they're trying to do, and I can put them in the $35 an hour room. That might not be great for my business, but it's great for my members' business. And so we just want to make sure we know what people are doing and what they're really looking to accomplish so that we can give them the best service at the best price.
I like that a lot. That makes you unique.
And well, I think it does.
Yeah, it does. And I guess that kind of ties into the next question. What makes a Commons significantly different than a WeWork and a Coco? And I have a follow-up after that.
Okay. So when people ask me about WeWork, I tell them pretty much I'm thrilled that they're here because we're apples and oranges. We are nothing like WeWork, and they are nothing like us. But what they have done is put a ton of money into their marketing, and people are starting to understand what co-working is. So all of their education is on their dime, and I'm benefiting from that. So I'm thankful that WeWork is in our market. If you go to WeWork, and those people that have been there and have experienced it, I know it's different in every location, but for the most part, you know, it's enterprise business. That's how they're making their money. So they're bringing in huge companies and providing workspace for their people or smaller groups. There's the individual coworkers, certainly. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, they're in big corporate buildings and it's a beautiful, beautiful spaces, beautiful environment. We're the shop local of co-working. You know, we're literally on the main streets of these two little gem of towns west of Minneapolis. I mean, our address in Hopkins is Main Street. And in Excelsior, we share the same building with the post office. And we're down the street from all the little shops. You walk out the door and you can go to any restaurant, you know, shopping, groceries. We tease here. We can walk out the door. We can, in our block, we can get, well, we can buy antiques. We can get our hair cut. We can buy clothes. We can get a tattoo. We can get our shoes repaired. Shoe repaired, barbershop, sharp, knife sharpened, you know, there's a tailor across the street, hardware store, grocery store, and drugstore. All of this is less than a block away. So you have all the services of a downtown, better services in my opinion, and you're probably working where you live instead of going someplace and paying for parking and doing all that. So I don't really feel like I compete with the WeWorks of the world. We're cheaper, yes. But we are the place where you walk in the door and I say, you know, how was your weekend? Did you enjoy having your niece and nephew over? How did your son's soccer game go? You know, I might have somebody who has a need for something that they would never ask somebody at WeWork for because they'd get charged a couple bucks here or there, or they couldn't or wouldn't do it. You know, I've run all over town for people. You know, when we've had meetings here and something maybe was supposed to be delivered and it didn't show up, I'll hop on my car and go get it for them. I'll make copies for anybody. I'll, you know, bring tablecloths from home to make your little luncheon look better. I mean, we're in the hospitality business and we treat people that way.
So while I've been here, I've really noticed that you make the Commons feel like a big family.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I talked to you about this last week. We had a couple of members come in last week that straight up said, you know, I was at WeWork, I was at Coco, now Fueled Collective. They're like, I was there for months and I didn't talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And I come here on the first day and you guys are all talking and joking around and having a good time, yet still working.
Yes.
And you're the reason why that happens. So what do you think you done to make that kind of happen?
Well, I think that naturally I'm just a connector of people. And you'll notice that somebody comes in and immediately the first thing I'm doing is I'm trying to figure out who to introduce them to. Not just so they have a new friend, but like, how can I help them? How can I help people? And I connect all the time because I love to. I mean, it's what I live for. It's more low-key here. It really is a little bit more eclectic. There's nothing corporate-y feeling about this, except that people are doing important work, you know. But, you know, 2 days ago, I think it was, a guy came in who works for a huge company here in town, certainly has lovely office space where he is, and came in here because he kind of wanted to have a focus day and get away from the office, and he knew about us. He hadn't been here before. So he's telling me that at the front door. I'm showing him where the coffee is. I'm showing him where he can stay. He said he's going to work on a project. I asked him what it is. He tells me a few little words about it. One of the other guys in our space walks up and says, don't mean to be eavesdropping. Don't mean to, you know, interrupt your conversation, but I heard what you said about X, and I'm working on some of that same data with a client of mine, and I would love to sit down and talk about it with you if you want to take 10 minutes. About an hour later, the two of them sat down, had coffee. Suddenly, there's all these connections going back and forth, sharing data, sharing, you know, some open source information. And that guy walked out the door, back to his corporate job the next day, and was moved enough to email me the next morning and say, because I had emailed him and thanked him for coming in, and he emailed me and said, I will be back.
I think that's huge. That's definitely one of the huge things, the connections.
Mm-hmm. We're making connections all the time.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
You are. Sorry. Got a little too into it. Took some credit. So, off of that story, do you have a favorite story from the Commons?
There's a million of them. Well, maybe not a million. There's a lot. What that one will probably go on one of my lists because I don't want to, you know, I am very careful not to talk about who people work for and what they do unless I have their permission to. But, I mean, that guy really does work for a really huge privately held company here in town.
Yeah.
But, so one day, and this was with a member of ours in Excelsior, and we've all been kind of living through some of the growing pains he's been having with his company. And he was sharing some of that with kind of the regular group. There's this one little pod of three guys that always kind of sit with each other. And he was sharing some of that. And new coworker, you know, one pod over, you know, one set of desks over, hears him and he gets up and he comes over and he said, you know what? You know, you're looking for somebody to do some packaging for you. That's my business. I can have my designers work on it and I can do that for you. And I mean, I think this guy just about cried when he was like, you can solve my problem. I can't find anybody to do it. And he's like, yeah, let's figure it out. Let's do it. And it wouldn't have happened if both those guys would. And I mean, it was mutually beneficial. Would not have happened if those guys had not been both at the Commons. Yeah. So that's one of them that I really, that makes my heart feel good. And it also, there's certain people who, you know, there's some who are more gregarious and some who talk more. But we had one member who had been with us for, you know, a significant period of time. And he was working as an independent contractor for somebody. And then he left and took a job where he had to go into the office. And then he was leaving there and he was going back to be an independent contractor. And he told his new employer that he really wanted to be back at the co-working space because of how productive he was there and how meaningful it was to him. This guy never talked to anybody. You know, he kept to himself and he wasn't one of the sociable people. He was very friendly, say hello when he'd go and get his coffee and whatnot, but this wasn't the one that was dipping in with everybody. But he told me this story and told me that, it was key in his productivity during the time he had been with us. And then when he was off at his corporate job, he wasn't nearly as productive. And that he knew what the difference was is that he was around people who are all trying to do everything that they can to be the most productive person that they can. And he needed to be around that energy. Nobody's sitting there collecting a paycheck. Everybody's working, committed, earnest. And that's what happens at the Commons.
Yeah. You watch a lot of business professionals.
Mm-hmm.
What are the skills that you think, or what do you see that people do really well that kind of sets them apart from others? And what are the couple of things that kind of just peeve you off? I mean, because you watch things, and I'm sure there are things that you see that you're like, why are you doing it that way?
Well, you know, interestingly, not as much of that. Eventually, I'm going to write an article or a blog or something that's like the truth about remote workers. Because I think that, you know, there's been this ebb and flow and ebb again of remote working being something that big companies are doing or mid-sized companies are doing. And I think people who manage remote workers from the home office think that they have to have their thumbs on them, or, you know, they don't have any accountability. And I would say that the remote workers that I watch work every day are some of the hardest working people I've ever seen. I mean, they don't have any different work habits or work ethic than the people who own their own businesses. I mean, they're working hard. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. you know, I'm pointing at some firms out there right now. They're there every day. They work all day long. And they have their head down and they're working. And yes, we do all joke around sometimes, and sometimes we have a little eruption of laughter or some kidding around. It lasts for, you know, 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets back to work. Everybody knows when maybe you need a little break, maybe a little mental health break, but they get right back to work. So I think people who don't get what remote working is, or don't get what those people are doing, would be surprised to hear me say that. And also surprised to hear me say that a majority of our remote workers are paying for it themselves than their company paying for it. Out of their own pocket. They're paying for their membership.
Wow. I didn't really notice that.
Well, you don't know, because you don't see, see who's paying. I do. And, you know, yeah, you'd be surprised how many of these guys, it's coming right out of their own pocket. Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. And you know, some of them might be putting things in for expenses that I don't really know. I mean, it's mm-hmm. on a credit card or whatever, but they want to know how much it is. And I can tell when they're asking those kind of questions, who's paying for it.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. So we'll do a couple more before we do the quick fire, which aren't really quick fire. but what kind of motivates your entrepreneurial ambitions? And before you answer that, mm-hmm. I'm also kind of curious about, did you have some entrepreneur in you, like, before you started the Commons? Because it seems as if your family yeah. is just pure entrepreneurs.
My family is.
Yeah. And yeah. It feels like you guys wouldn't be able to breathe if you guys weren't starting something, even right. with any kind of problems in the that come up. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, my husband has been, even when he was working for another company, it was his own business that he was building, and he was commission only. And that's pretty much like being an entrepreneur, even if you're in that structure. And so he's probably been, well, that, you know what? I almost forgot about this. So this is a funny little story you don't know. Back when we were living in the New York City area and I was working on Wall Street and doing that, we started a tanning salon. This was 1984, actually probably started in 1985. It was just like the big thing in the Midwest. And then we moved out there and we were like, we were living in New Jersey, how come they don't have tanning salons? So Scott started a tanning salon. He was a pharmacist. Anyway, we had this little tanning salon. Yeah. And okay, if I offend people, I apologize before I tell. But there's a whole bunch of young men who were big weightlifters in New Jersey. You just think Jersey Shore. And those guys loved coming in and going into the tanning machine. Yeah, so 1985 was the first business we started. Mm-hmm. And you know, we had a rental property. And then my husband has had his own business since, officially, I guess, probably since 1994, 1995. And I've always had some finger in that, you know. When you have your own thing, you know, it's part of the family's lifestyle. That's how my boys learned to be entrepreneurs. And mm-hmm. yeah, so, yeah, we've always been entrepreneurs.
So, ultimately, what feeds?
Oh, what ambition? Feeds it?
Yeah. I mean, you answered my last part of the question, but no, yeah, here it's
so,
the first part.
What feeds me to do it is, I love that there are no limits, one way or the other. And it doesn't mean, I think sometimes people falsely look at people who say, I want flexibility and I don't want a boss, like they don't want to work. And you know better than anybody that people who are entrepreneurs work more than anybody else does. And you never turn off, and it's long hours for little payoff for a majority of the time. When it does pay off, there aren't any limits to it. If you've structured it correctly, you know, I like if I have an idea, I can run with it, that I don't have to go through a whole bunch of, you know, committees and people to determine if I can do something or not. I don't need the status and accolades of, you know, working my way through a corporate structure, though I did do some of that, you know, in my 20s. But I just like the nimbleness of being an entrepreneur. That's what motivates me.
You saying that you'll work really hard without getting any payoff for some time. We joke a lot about how we haven't gotten paid in years.
We haven't gotten paid in years. We haven't.
No.
No.
And we're working crazy hours. So, last question, just for my own personal, I just need to know, do you have any entrepreneurial heroes? Like, are there any individuals that you mimic, women or men or some other thing?
No, I just have such a high opinion of myself. You know, I think that the entrepreneurs that I probably, I can't like whip out a name and say, yeah, this person really, but there's people that are in certain little segments that I follow, you know, like I love to listen to what Seth Godin has to say or Gary Vaynerchuk or, you know, some of those people. I get very motivated by them talking about the creative process and talking about marketing in general. But I think that, you know, my entrepreneurial heroes are, you know, my dad was always an entrepreneur too. My dad had a construction company. My dad's a civil engineer and had a construction company. And, you know, my brother-in-law also has his own construction company. And I just look at how they provide employment for a lot of people, a wonderful living for a lot of people, and that they are, again, putting out great products and great services. And it's about integrity. I mean, anybody that I have great regard for, it's not how, you know, successful they are as measured by money. It's not how successful they are as measured by, you know, more assets here and there. It's about, did they really provide people a way to make an honest living? And did they do it with integrity? And do they do it with the commitment to the individuals within their company to grow and become the people that they can be?
Good answer. Ready for the quick fire?
Yeah, but I never even got prepared for the quick fire, even though heard all these.
Yeah, you've heard them before, so you should be ready.
I should have. Okay.
All right, so the random question
of
the week. Here we go. What is an invention that you wish existed today but does not?
Oh, wow. That is a really good question. What is it that I wish existed today that does not? Something that could write for me what's going on in my head and organize it. I have way too much stuff in my head. And then when I try to put it down into words on paper on my computer, it doesn't come out nearly as great as it is in my head. So, a head editor, a brain editor.
Does it come out in words as good as
it comes out better in words than in writing, I think.
Sounds like someone needs to start recording their thoughts.
Someone probably does.
Okay, the second question. What skills does a young professional need to have straight out of college?
You know, this is the easy one for me. They need to be able to speak and to write. You asked me like 3 questions ago what drives me crazy when I watch people, because I watch people work all day. Mm-hmm. I bristle. I just like lose it and have to sit with myself and like count to 10 when I hear horrible grammar, which I don't often, but when I do, it's just, or people saying like, and I probably said it 100 times during this.
Me too.
But the like.
But we'll edit it out of here so you sound
good. Yeah, so I sound really good from my brain editor. You need to be able to write in full and complete sentences that are grammatically correct. And they don't have to be perfect. I'm not asking people to be grammarians, but get your ideas across in words and do it in such a way that your intelligence comes through, because so many people are so much smarter than the way that they write. Hmm. And in speaking, you just have to have a natural curiosity about other people and ask them questions. Ask people questions. That's the skill that young professionals need to have. Learn how to be curious and ask people questions.
Hmm. You know, that's the one, or that's actually what Howard Root said.
Oh, did
podcast. He? Yeah, he said that people need to learn how to write and speak clearer. And I'm just curious, because he answered this as well, and I can't remember his answer, so sorry, Howard. But why is that so important?
Well, you only get one shot at getting your idea across most of the time in business. And you need to be able to put it both verbally and written, because your audiences can be different. So you might be a great speaker and a horrible writer, and you're going to miss a whole bunch of people because they only want to read what you wrote or read what you're thinking.
Mm-hmm. So the third quickfire question, what do you have to sacrifice to
you
be
know,
successful?
I think about, when I listen to your podcast, I think about this sometimes, and I always love everybody's answer. But somebody said, and I actually really loved it, that they said nothing. You don't have to sacrifice anything. You just have to figure it all out. I don't know that that's true, but I think that was the most thought-provoking answer, was you don't have to sacrifice anything. And don't sacrifice your integrity. Don't sacrifice your values. Don't sacrifice your family. All of that is way too important. And here I sit at nearly 60 years old, and I can guarantee anybody sitting there that there are times when you will have to sacrifice your time, and you will have to sacrifice your recreational opportunities and all of that. But the thing that you have to sacrifice is the things that are momentary. It's not like you give something up forever. So when you think sacrifice, you think like it's dead and it's gone. I think that there are just situational sacrifices that you have to make. And sometimes it is that you don't make it home for dinner, you don't get to see your kids, you know, play, or you don't maybe get to do that. But it's situational. And don't ever put work before family. But sometimes, dang it, you have to. So, because that's your job, and you're going to have to do it. And that doesn't mean that you have to do it the next time. So your family needs to understand that there's a real life there, too.
Yeah.
So that they don't become precious.
True. So, last question. Can you guess what it is?
What life hack, right?
Yep.
Tell me.
So what is one life hack
a
student of business should apply to their life this week?
I still don't get what a life hack is, because everybody's response is a little bit different. So what do you think a life hack is? Define it for me.
So a life hack in my mind, and maybe I'll define this more in the future when I ask a question, is just some actionable lesson that someone could apply to their life this week. So what is one thing that they could do this week, essentially, one action they could take that you believe would improve their life, essentially?
Well, I will say something that I never do, which is, and I'm still trying to do it at my advanced age, is schedule your time. I mean, that really is important. And the people who I see who are successful really do schedule their time. And that doesn't mean that you're not flexible, but that you at the beginning of the day or the night before, however it is that different people do it, on Sunday night for the whole week, however it is, and there's a million ways to do it, but schedule your time and block it. I sort of kind of take pride in my ability to react to people and to, you know, jump to the latest crisis, but you know what? That's no way to do it. You have to be flexible. In my business, if somebody walks in the door, doesn't matter if I have something else I have to do. They walk in the door, now that's what I have to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what my business is. But I still then need to look at what I'm supposed to do for the day and accomplish it. And if I prioritize it and something can move to the next day, that's fine. But I, excuse my language, I really suck at that. And I think it's because I didn't start doing it at an early age. And so that's what, if you were asking me for advice, that's the advice that I would get.
So, to break it down just slightly more, because I try to do this with everyone, how could they actually do that this week? What would you tell them to do? I know you don't do it yourself, but if you were to do it, what do you wish
to do? Yeah, and when I have done it and when it worked, and then why the heck did I leave it by the wayside? I don't know. But I would do it every day at the end of the day before I went home. I would decide what I was going to do the next day. And I'm not going to tell people what that is, but it might be something as simple as look at my emails and be, you know, from 8 to 8:30, be done with them, and I'm not going to look at them again until noon. Or I'm going to block the morning to do anything where you have to do a writing project. And again, different people are more productive at different times of the day. Know when you are productive.
Yeah.
I'm not a morning person. excuse me, I'm not a morning person, so I tend to do task-oriented things in the morning, get them off my plate, and then I kind of get into a role about midday where that's when I'm actually writing things that I want to look as good as I just said people should be able to do.
Yeah.
And so I know myself well enough that I really shouldn't start that at like, you know, 4:30. I also know that I have another little surge of that in the evening that I can do at home too. So sometimes when I'm at home and there's nothing else going on and nothing can interrupt me, I'll do that work then.
Interesting. That's a good answer. Well, I think we got through all of them.
Oh, I can't believe it.
So thank you so much
well,
for
thank
joining
you.
The show.
So I said before we started, now I feel like this is my moment in the sun that I finally got to be on Bobby's podcast.
It's a big moment for the both of us.
Thank you.
Bobby Mason back with you, your lovely host. I know you're probably sick of that, but some quick reminders before I let you go this week. Here we go. Number one, co-working can be a great way for remote workers, entrepreneurs, and freelancers to stay motivated while connecting with others. If you're interested in the commons, visit www.thecommonswp.com. Weekly life hack. At the end of every day this week, sit down and plan out the next day. Plan what you need to get done tomorrow and block off times to get those very things done. That's this week's episode of Master the Start. Thank you so much for hanging in there. And once again, I'm so sorry for being so foolish and not making sure our audio was better quality and figuring out how to make the mics work earlier. Have a wonderful week, everyone. Bye-bye.